How's it going, everybody? And welcome on into the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. It is tournament week. It is an exciting week. And for this episode, we're going to be talking with Jack Benjamin. He is a play-by-play announcer who has been covering the Southland for many, many years. And so he will be able to talk to us about McNeese State. He also has broadcasted games for ESPN, CBS Sports, and FS1. And he also has done games for Grand Canyon. So he will be able to talk to both matchups, kind of dig a little bit deeper into both of these matchups, McNeese against Gonzaga, and then also Grand Canyon for St. Mary's. Great conversation. So we'll get into that right now. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and also follow on social media at Post by Zach. Without further ado, here is the interview with Jack Benjamin. I'm happy to bring on a play-by-play broadcaster, Jack Benjamin. He calls games for ESPN, CBS Sports Network, FS1. He is the TV host for the Southland Conference and Sunbelt Conference, so he does know McNeese very well. He also called a few of the Grand Canyon games early on this season. And for the WCC people, also a Santa Clara alum, so this is also kind of like someone who knows this league pretty well. Jack, how's it going? As I know the season's starting to wrap up, but how is it going? How is it down in the Southland?
Yeah, no, things are good, Zach. Appreciate you having me on. I told you, I've been a longtime fan of the podcast. You do a great job. And as a Santa Clara alum, man, I'm looking for my WCC fix anywhere I can get it. So I appreciate all that you do. And yeah, no, things are good. The Southland tournament was a blast. I think, you know, what McNeese has been able to do has been fascinating. I know there's a lot of Gonzaga fans right now curious about the matchup and how that's going to work out. And there's a lot of Gonzaga fans that are questioning why St. Mary's is in their spot in Spokane and they're having to go to Salt Lake City. But no, there's a lot of really fascinating storylines there, I think. And unfortunately for my Broncos, this is year 28, man. I was born in 1996. That was our last NCAA tournament appearance. So in my lifetime on earth, I still have not seen the team in an NCAA tournament. They were in it in 96. I hadn't been born yet when they were eliminated. So hopefully soon, man. But another year by the wayside, unfortunately.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that Santa Clara program does look like it's pointed in the right direction. Herb Sendek, I think, has done a great job kind of retooling that program and kind of pointing it in the right direction. They've obviously had some great wins early on in the year. I have some very large pit speed bumps as well along the way. But that Santa Clara team does look like it's moving in the right direction. So want to jump into obviously like two teams you are pretty familiar with, and we'll start with the one you've seen more than any of these. It's McNeese State. Gonzaga does have them on Thursday in Salt Lake City in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I mean, this McNeese team, 30-3, 17-1 in the Southland, really impressive looking at just kind of like the surface level numbers of what they have. Tell me a little bit about this squad. What are some of the keys for those who are going to be watching this game, for the Gonzaga fans who are a little concerned and seeing a bunch of the prognosticators picking McNeese over them? What does this team bring?
Yeah, well, let me say this first and acknowledge this first, because I've been looking all over social media. The first thing Gonzaga fans have been pointing out is the 30-3 record with four games against non-Division I opponents, including, if you look at their schedule, they did play the Mississippi University for Women. So I'm just throwing that out there. That's been kind of a laughing point. Now, with that said, with the four non-D1s they've played, they've also beaten UAB by 20. They've beaten VCU. They've beaten Louisiana, albeit not a great team in the Sun Belt, but had a solid year. They went to a Michigan team that had a lot of struggles this year and just moved on from Juwan Howard, but controlled that game really start to finish in Ann Arbor. And then in a Southland conference that is not the worst conference in America, it's certainly not the best. It's obviously, you know, you look at the metrics and it's toward the bottom as far as conferences go, but they did what they had to do for the most part. They lost one conference game at Southeastern Louisiana by 3. They are number one nationally in scoring margin. So I think a lot of times when you look at a mid-major, the question is, okay, well, how are they? Are they escaping teams? Are they winning by one? They haven't played that many close games. In fact, you can count them pretty much on a hand. They've basically played, you know, it's 10 games in total, decided by single digits all season long. Their last game they played against a team that was decided by less than 10 was against Lamar a few weeks ago, and they won that game in Beaumont. I mean, they've won 11 straight games. They've won 25 of 26. And Will Wade is a name that Gonzaga fans, I'm sure, know from his time at VCU and LSU and now McNeese. And we know what happened at LSU and kind of the way that things went down there. He was suspended 10 games at the start of the year. It was initially going to be a 5-game suspension. It turns to 10. McNeese tacked onto it. And with him as the head coach officially on the sidelines, they're 22-1, with the only loss being at Southeastern. So I think the number one thing when you look at this team in today's day and age, Zach, with the transfer portal and the way that guys shift around, the number one thing a Gonzaga fan would see if you start digging into their roster is power six transfer, two-time transfer. I mean, there's a lot of guys. It starts with Shahade Wells. He is from TCU. I think Gonzaga fans know him very well because they eliminated him in last year's NCAA tournament. So that's your first storyline right off the bat. You got the Southland Conference Player of the Year, a guy who has done it in his career. He was at UT Arlington prior to going to TCU, and he was an all-Sun Belt player there. He started at Tyler Junior College, but he is as good a guard as you're going to see in March, in my opinion. I mean, the way he works off ball screens, he's a terrific three-point shooter, gets to the free throw line a ton. I mean, he just completely dominated the Southland tournament. He had 27 points in both games. I called those on radio. He was really, really good the way he can control a game. And then I think the number one thing is the way that he defends. He's their leader. He's their best player. And he's top five nationally in steals. He's been there all season long. So, you know, that's a guy who's been around the block. You got a guy like Antavion Collum, who transferred in from Cal State Bakersfield. There's a bunch of multi-time transfers on this team. He started his career at Ole Miss. He's a stretch four, a good three-point shooter. So he's got a lot of ways to beat you from beyond the arc. He's made some clutch shots for them. I think a guy like DJ Richards off the bench has been really good. He was at UTSA a year ago. He averaged double figures in the American. So he's come over and shot the lights out. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the country. And then Christian Shumate's a name that I think Gonzaga fans should start getting familiar with. This guy's been on SportsCenter 9 times. He's been the number one play on SportsCenter twice. He is not a good shooter from outside. He's not going to beat you with a jump shot. He's only like a 45% career free throw shooter, but he is as athletic as they come at 6'6". He's a guy who's actually, you know, he's been one of the few holdovers. Will Wade, I think, had 12 newcomers, 9 transfers. He's been with McNeese for 3 years. So he's gone from an 11-win season to an 11-win season to now winning 30 games. And he's in his first NCAA tournament. I know that he's got something to prove. So those are kind of some of the names to look at. And Mike Saunders is a guy who's been at Cincinnati and Utah. He comes off the bench. C.J. Felder was at Florida, and he's a guy who's, I think, given them a lot of good minutes. This is a deep team. There's not a lot of drop-off when they go to the bench. So the number one thing is, as far as keys go, when you start looking at the roster, you can't see this as a mid-major team when they have, you know, kind of the makeup of a Power 6 roster with the way Will Wade has put it together.
And that was one of the first things I kind of like that jumped out was just the depth and the usage of that bench, like 9 players that average 10 or more minutes a game. And you talked about like that depth because also just because I'm just thinking about this Gonzaga team that hasn't used their bench really all year long. And right. A team that only really goes 6 or 7 deep based on the game. I think they only used 6 players in the game against St. Mary's just the other night. Obviously, like you mentioned, McNeese hasn't played a whole lot of close games in this one, but like it also looks like that this is a team that kind of thrives on being able to kind of get out and run and be able to kind of use some of the depth that they do have. I see like the third in the nation in steals per game, third in turnover margin, the 20.8 points off turnovers per game. This is a team that seems like it wants to get out and run and turn that defense and the offense a lot more. Kind of talk about like just style-wise, what we might see from the squad.
Yeah, I think they're top 30 in fast break points. You mentioned the points off turnovers. They are electric in transition. And when I say that, if they can get out and run, if they can turn you over, it's going to become a highlight that may very well make it its way onto SportsCenter because of the amount of athletes they have in the open floor. I mentioned Shumate. You know, one guy I didn't mention is Javon Garcia. He's a junior college transfer. He was at the College of the Sequoias, which is, you know, in California, so people might know that a little bit. But that's another guy who's an elite athlete. I mean, there are 3 or 4 guys who can dunk on you, you know, if you're 6'10" or taller on this team. They can really jump. So, yeah, I think they do want to get out and run. They are good in the half court. I don't know that they're the most elite team in America in the half court because they don't really have a true post presence, a guy, you know, you can throw the ball down to. They don't have, a Graham Ike to throw the ball on the block to and get you a basket when you need it. But they have, an elite point guard play. They have really good shooting. You know, you mentioned the depth, Zach. I think one of the things that stuck out to me when I was first looking at them this year and just kind of looking through the numbers, there are 4 or 5 guys around 40% from 3. So, you know, a lot of times a team will shoot pretty well from 3-point range, and it's one guy making 93s or 103s or whatever it is. And you just look at these guys, it's 40 makes at a 38% clip, 45 makes at a 45% clip. You just go down the line. There's a lot of guys who can beat you from beyond the arc. So I think that's a lot of what Will Wade can do. And then, yeah, he's created this element of having a bench that scores, I think, 26 or 27 points a game. The bench was really, really good in the Southland tournament in those two games I called. There had been a top 50 bench scoring unit nationally all season long. So when you have a team that can not have a major drop-off when you have to, you know, give Shahade Wells a breather, give Christian Shumate a breather, give DJ Richards a breather, or DJ Richards can hop in. I mean, the luxury of having a guy like Mike Saunders, who would probably be a starting point guard on a bunch of Power 6 conference teams, bringing him off the bench. I mean, he gave them some great minutes in the Southland championship game against Nichols, which they won by 16 points. I mean, they've won over the course of this 11-game win streak, they've won all but one of them by 10 or more points. So a big reason for that is how deep they are and how many weapons they have.
And look, I mean, talked about like some of the results early on, because obviously, like, even though Michigan was not very good this year, kind of like still getting a win on the road at a Big Ten opponent still does have a lot of value, especially for when you're from a smaller conference or whatnot. And the one thing we know is that the Gonzaga fans are going to travel well. They don't have to go far. They're going to only have to travel to Salt Lake City. It feels like that sort of experience is going to help this squad, because they did have to go into some more hostile environments in some bigger arenas, and heading to Salt Lake to take on the Zags, who also travel well and will pack that building. It does seem like that at least that there's some level of, they may have some comfort in that sort of environment.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. First of all, it's certainly going to be a little different than the Southland Conference Tournament, because I don't know how much you followed kind of the way that they structure that, but McNeese played the Southland Tournament on their home floor. And they're going to host it through 2028 in Lake Charles. I don't know how much people know about Lake Charles and the community there, but people there love their teams. It had been historically a pretty good FCS football school that's made some great runs deep. And this is by far the best basketball season they have ever had. It's the most wins in school history, their third NCAA tournament appearance, their first in 22 years. It basically took a couple of games with Will Wade on the sidelines officially after the suspension for their gym to be filled the entire season. And they have traveled well. Obviously, in the Southland Conference, you're not playing in the biggest gyms in the world, but they went to VCU. Will Wade was on the sidelines for that game, and they won that game, you know, with a couple assistants coaching. So, yeah, to win in that environment, to go to UAB and beat a tournament team there by 21 the way they did, that's a really good offense, too, and they held them to 60 points. McNeese is one of the best in the country as far as scoring defense goes, and it's kind of been that way all season long. But, I think that this crowd, the point I'm trying to make is, they have gotten behind a team that has had a really, really special season. I mean, you don't see this much. I was saying this to someone earlier. McNeese is a 12 seed. They were knocking on the door for maybe an 11 seed earlier in the year. A Southland team has never been an 11 seed. This matches the best seed the conference has ever had. I think SFA was a 12 seed in 2014 and 2015. And people might remember in 2014, they knocked off VCU, which, you know, Will Wade was not too long away. He had actually just left VCU as an assistant to go coach at Chattanooga. But a season like this doesn't come along very often in this conference. This community, it wasn't that long ago, man. They had a couple of hurricanes hit the area, Laura and Delta, like back to back consecutively. Their gym got destroyed. They had to rebuild the whole thing. It's a beautiful new complex they have, but this community has been waiting for something like this for a long time. They're going to be out there in full force. I don't know that they'll outnumber Gonzaga fans. Gonzaga fans they've been doing this, 25 straight years now? I think they've got, they're a little more in rhythm for how this goes
They have some practice at this. They have some experience.
I'd say they're a little more like that, yeah. But I will tell you this. I don't think this team will be phased. I mean, you look at the roster makeup. I was talking about how many older guys they have. They've got 6 juniors, 3 are fourth-year juniors. They have a senior, and then they have 3 grad students. They've got, I think, 4 or 5 two-time transfers. They have a couple guys who weren't even eligible until later on in the season when the two-time transfer rules went. I mentioned Mike Saunders and CJ Felder. Both of those guys weren't eligible until, you know, the end of non-conference play. So they're not going to be phased by this kind of environment. And, yeah, I think the early test they had, I would say that only has to help as far as experience goes.
What's maybe the – is there something that – even though, like, obviously this team won 30 games, it's hard to kind of like pick what they don't do well. What's something that maybe that Gonzaga might be able to take advantage of, or what's something that kind of like sticks out to you in a matchup like this that you're kind of like, okay, maybe this is the one thing or a couple things that McNeese is going to have a bigger challenge against?
Yeah, I think a couple things. Now, you know, to your point, you lose three games. It's hard to find fault with a team like this. I think what I dug into during the conference tournament was, you know, looking at the games that have been decided by single digits. So basically 10 games that have been, you know, decided by 9 points or fewer, and kind of what happens in those games. And the bottom line is teams that hang with them knock down threes. And we know Gonzaga can shoot the three. I think that in the three losses McNeese had, teams made about 11 threes per game and did it efficiently at about a 42 or so percent clip. Now, this is a pretty good three-point defense. It has been all season long. I think I had it. Yeah, I mean, they're top 40 in the nation in three-point defense. They've been pretty good in that regard. But, you know, in the Southland Championship game, for instance, I remember watching Will Wade on the sidelines. Nichols had a guy, Deontay Smith, go for 33 points in that game. He just went ballistic from three-point range. And there were a lot of breakdowns defensively by them on the three-point arc. So that is an area that, look, Gonzaga, we know they can be streaky at times from three-point range, but there's also, you know, there's a capable element to that. There is not a lot of size in this McNeese team. That's, I think, the number one thing someone would look at just from a roster value standpoint. The tallest guy is 6'9". No one, you know, as far as that size goes, you know, it's not a team that's going to go and overwhelm you as far as block shots go. They have a pretty good block rate on KenPom. I think they block about 30% of their shots or something like that. I'm sorry, not 30% is too many. They block about 12% of their shots. 30%, that's otherworldly. But it's about a 12% block rate. So it's not the worst thing in the world, but there are opportunities if you have a post presence to attack inside in that regard. And so I would think that a guy like Graham Ike in a matchup like this, Anton Watson, and depending on what he can do in the block, could those guys be a problem for McNeese? Absolutely. I think that is where Gonzaga's strength is. I think McNeese has really good guard depth. I think they've got experienced and older guards. I like McNeese as far as matching up with the Gonzaga backcourt and as far as that goes. But those are sort of the two things that have stood out with them. And then, yeah, you know, they've been pretty good all year at not turning the ball over. They can at times get careless, like any team that, you know, can have a possession turned into a highlight in the blink of an eye. They can also throw the ball away and get careless at times. Doesn't happen that much. They have, again, guys who are pretty good as far as the assist turnover ratio goes. I mean, they're one of the best in the country as far as turnover margin. But those are a couple things I look at for sure. And then you also have the question of you're playing in an NCAA tournament for the first time. If you're not named Shahade Wells, he's the only guy with NCAA tournament experience. Their coach has been to some NCAA tournaments, but I don't think you can ever, you know, you can never count that enough as far as tournament experience goes and guys who have been there and done it. And I think Gonzaga in that regard, with the advantage they have, I mean, that has to play a role, especially early on. Will it matter over the course of 40 minutes? I don't know, but that is certainly something that, you know, it matters. You got these older guys who've been at Power Sixes, but only one of them has played in an NCAA tournament. It's a different beast when you're going into the big dance for the first time.
Absolutely. All right, so I'm going to switch gears here and talk about the other match, the other WCC matchup, which is St. Mary's and Grand Canyon. This Grand Canyon team has won 29 games, and this team, offensively, you look up and down this roster, this is a loaded group, and there are some really exciting players to kind of watch, and I know a lot of people, this is another one of those 5-12 matchups that everyone's kind of circling. In the few times you've gotten to see this squad, and I know like you saw them early on, what jumps out? What are some of the things about this Grand Canyon squad that really kind of stands out for you?
Yeah, so everybody knows, I saw them up close in person as Zach mentioned. I did a couple games for CBS Sports Network in November, so we'll keep that in perspective. I've not watched them live in person now in a number of months, but yeah, obviously dug into them when I was calling their games and came away super impressed. Unfortunately, I actually called one of their losses, so I've gotten a lot of flack from their people. You know, they lost the Arizona tip-off title game to South Carolina, and of course they're always shooting me messages on you know, social media now. Hey man, what are you doing to us? But no, I mean, Bryce Drew, for those who don't know, he's been there now 4 years. They've made three NCAA tournaments. He's done a remarkable job. They're 93-31. Like, you put that in perspective. I mean, this is a program. This is not an overnight success story. I mean, these guys have been there and done it. The only thing they really have not accomplished is winning an NCAA tournament game. And I would say by far, this is the best team he has had. This is their best chance. Unfortunately for them, they're running into a St. Mary's team that you know me, man. I have all the respect in the world for Randy Bennett. I think it was an 8-6 start, right? I remember watching that loss to Missouri State, thinking to myself, what has happened to St. Mary's? And the switch flipped, and I'm like, I don't think anyone wants to face these guys come March Madness, and here we are, one of my my favorite teams in the field in Grand Canyon's going up against them. So yeah, I think when you look at them, the first thing you notice is, you know, similar, we were talking about McNeese and how many weapons they have. They just, you go down the line and they have so many guys who can beat you. It really is like an all-star team assembled of guys who can, you know, go off the dribble and score and do multiple things, and all conference guys. Tyon Grant Foster is obviously the lead guy. He's, in my opinion, the best story in college basketball in a year that has had plenty of them. For those who don't know, you're talking about a guy who was not highly recruited out of high school, didn't have the grades, went to junior college. Bill Self scoops him up at Kansas after he becomes an All-American. He didn't get a lot of playing time there. He did play in an NCAA tournament with them. He transfers to DePaul. He plays one half of one game, collapses in the locker room at halftime, has to be rushed to the hospital. He ends up having two heart surgeries. Couldn't play for 2 years, basically. And Grand Canyon brings him on, you know, taking a flyer on him. And he's become one of the most exciting players in the country and averaging nearly 20 points per game. And he's an electric scorer. He scores at multiple levels. I mean, he's the kind of guy that in March everybody wants to watch. He just can take over a game. But he also can have some tough nights shooting the ball. And you know, I happen to – one of the games he played against South Carolina, I think he shot 5-for-17 or something like that from the floor. So he can be streaky. He can be streaky hot. He was really good in the WAC tournament. I got a lot of respect for him and his story and what he's come back from. It's really similar to, if you know Keontae Johnson and what he did at Kansas State and the comeback story there. Actually, Scott Drew, there's a little connection there between Scott and Bryce and kind of all that goes. But yeah, he's the guy who heads it all. Ray Harrison has almost become, you know, the fact that Ray Harrison's your number two guy is unbelievable, because he was the WAC player of the year, or WAC preseason player of the year, and just completely took over the WAC tournament a year ago. And now he's a guy who they just steadies the ship. He's been around. He can score in so many ways, really good facilitator, incredibly crafty guard. I mean, it feels like forever ago that he was at Presbyterian in the Big South, and now he's, you know, playing in another NCAA tournament. So he's been there and done it. Gabe McLaughlin is, I think, as good a stretch forward there is in college basketball, honestly. I mean, he has so much he can do, a really, really good skill set, great defender, guy who can stretch the floor and shoot the three, has gotten better and better every year. He was, I think, first-team all-conference along with Tyon Grant Foster. So, you know, that's a guy that's a major weapon. And then you start going down the line, and, you know, you think about Jovan Blackshear, who was the WAC preseason player of the year a season ago and has kind of become forgotten because he hurt his knee last year and he couldn't, you know, he tore his ACL, couldn't play. Ray Harrison takes over, becomes, you know, the best player in the WAC a year ago. And he now comes off the bench. And ever since he didn't play early on when I saw them in the Arizona tip-off, but he now is a huge asset off the bench. I mean, that's as good a bench guard as there is in college basketball with bringing him off the bench and what he can do for you as an explosive scorer and a playmaker. Luke War is starting to really come into his own. You know, I remember watching him early on in the season. He started his career at Oregon. He was there for 4 years before coming over. So that's a guy who's been in a couple NCAA tournaments as well. And I remember watching him thinking, boy, this guy, if he can put it together offensively, and now he's, I mean, if the WAC championship game, he knocked down a couple of threes. They were backbreaking for UT Arlington, the game that GCU won by 15. So, you know, that's a guy who can give them so much. I think a guy like Duke Brennan does all the little things. Another guy who was at Arizona State, who's been at the Power Six level, who you know, has been in big games. And then, yeah, one other guy, too, I think that goes under the radar because he ultimately they don't need him to score all the time. They need him to do the little things is Colin Moore, who was at Georgia State averaging 15 points a game last year. And now he is, you know, being a really big impact guy off the bench for Bryce Drew. So, yeah, he's got a lot of weapons to go to. It's a deep bench. Yeah, I got a lot of respect for this Grand Canyon team. I think they are one of the most fun teams in the field to watch for sure.
And I mean, looking at this also, like you've seen, I think it's almost kind of interesting because they get another matchup with a WCC team because they saw Gonzaga in the tournament a year ago. Right. And over the last couple of years, we've seen them play USF, LMU, Pepperdine, Gonzaga, Portland, now St. Mary's. It's like they're kind of getting the gauntlet of the WCC teams. And yeah, they've been one of the rumored teams out there of like if the WCC were to expand, Grand Canyon would be on that short list of squads, and they've kind of gotten their fair share of WCC taste because they did beat Portland earlier in the year. They did see USF and beat them earlier in the year, as you kind of like pointed out in that one, because that was a game again, like for the WCC people who know USF a little bit better. In that game, what was kind of like some of the things you that popped out. I'm looking at the box score and just see like the 28 from Grant Foster to 24 from Harrison. Just like the way that team operates, because that was one where it felt like that they had, because I think if I remember correctly, they had to come back in that one to win.
Yeah, they came back in that one. You know, they came back against San Francisco in the Arizona tip-off. I saw them. That was the, I think, third game they played on the season. And so I sort of saw that as, okay, measuring stick game. Let's see where San Francisco's at. Let's see where GCU is at. San Francisco, frankly, should have won that game. I mean, they controlled that game for a lot of it. I mean, Marcus Williams just went off in the second half and couldn't miss. And down the stretch, it just became the tie on Grant Foster show and Ray Harrison taking over. And the number one thing I saw early on in the season, Zach, and the number one thing I saw, you mentioned Portland. You mentioned what they've done all season long. They get to the free throw line at an absolutely absurd amount. I mean, it is unbelievable the way that they draw fouls. I think Tyon Grant Foster is among the best nationally in fouls drawn per 40 minutes on KenPom. Ray Harrison has been there historically in his career. They shot 50 free throws. They shot 50 free throws against UT Arlington in the WAC championship game. So if you're wondering, did the game take a while? Yeah, it took a while to finish. I don't know what time I ended up getting to bed after it finished, but that's the latest I've ever gotten to bed for a game that was regulation. And free throws just were getting shot every whistle. So in the NCAA tournament, are you going to get as many whistles? Maybe not, but they were 37 for 50 in the WAC championship. They took 30-plus free throws in the two games I saw them in November. Grant Foster took, 18 free throws in the WAC title game. Ray Harrison took 11. St. Mary's is usually pretty good at not fouling, but that is, I guarantee you, Randy Bennett, when he's talking to his team in practice this week, it's how do we guard without fouling? Because they're a team that can make tough shots, but if you can make them make tough shots and not let them stroll to the free throw line the way that they typically do, and they get there a whole lot, there's something to be said for teams who are just in attack mode constantly. If St. Mary's can guard without fouling, yeah, they're going to have a pretty good chance, because that's where Grand Canyon makes, a lot of its hay as far as offensively and what they can do. And I think, that the other question too is the pace, right? St. Mary's, we all know how deliberate they are and the way that they slow things down. And typically in NCAA tournament games, I'm not saying this is always the case, because for instance, a Virginia UMBC, it happens where you get a game like that. And we know what, Virginia, DeAndre Hunter didn't play and all that stuff, but it happens where a slow tempo team, can't control the pace in a tournament game. But in a game like this, we have a team who wants to play pretty fast against a team who is on the slower side tempo-wise. Who can establish that rhythm and tempo early on in the game? I think you're going to find out a lot in the first couple of minutes about how it's going to go. And, Bryce Drew's team is certainly capable of playing a slow, methodical half-court game, but they want to get out and run if they can. And that's where they're at their best in high scoring and high flying and obviously getting off, threes in transition and that sort of thing. And using their athleticism, where I think they do have an athleticism advantage, I would think, on St. Mary's. But if St. Mary's can control the game in the half court and, Mahaney and company can do their thing, Marshall Onis and all these guys who really can, score the ball with the best of them in the half court in a slower game, St. Mary's, I think, would have a pretty good chance.
I mean, these two games are going to be incredibly fascinating. The two 5-12s, Gonzaga taking on McNeese State, St. Mary's taking on Grand Canyon. Do you have a pick in either of these? Have you filled out the bracket? What do you see in these two?
I knew you were going to fire away at me, man. It's only, we're recording this early week, and I'm trying to, gather all the information I can.
To be fair, I also have not filled out a bracket either, so I'm still in the early stages.
Yeah, I have not filled one out yet. I know WCC fans are going to be on my neck if they watch this and I pick against them. And then you got the McNeese people who are on me if I pick against them, and you got the Grand Canyon people same way. But that's part of the business, right? It's how it goes. I'll give you this. I don't know if I'll end up at the end of my little soliloquy here coming to an end of a game prediction. But this McNeese, I'll go to McNeese Gonzaga first. This McNeese team, there's just something about what they've been able to do this year. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is, but there's some magic right now in the water in Lake Charles. They've had this incredible run. Will Wade, it just feels like this has been a revenge tour for him. And this is a guy who is coaching a team. You have a guy who has won games in the NCAA tournament with a bunch of players who have not been to the NCAA tournament. So you sort of wonder how that dynamic goes about. But I don't know, man. McNeese has, from what I've seen from them this year and how many weapons they have offensively, I think they're going to give Gonzaga a lot of problems. I think they would have the potential to pull an upset more so than Grand Canyon would against St. Mary's. That's kind of part of, I think, what I'm seeing as far as I go through the prediction standpoint. just because of McNeese and the experience level. I think the weapons they have, I think, you know, the way that they can shoot the three ball and the way that their defense travels, they sort of have the recipe for a team to pull off that kind of upset in March. So, you know, that's it, certainly Gonzaga is on. Look, everybody's on upset alert this time of year, but I see that one being a great one. I think GCU St. Mary's is going to be a great one too. I just wonder, you know, with St. Mary's, how elite they are defensively and the way that they can slow things down at times. Grand Canyon is loaded with the amount of talent they have. You know, can they play, you know, can they play a game a few different ways? You know, we're going to find out because they're going to have to do that to beat St. Mary's. But yeah, I think they're both going to be two fascinating games. I think without kind of going into it too deep this week, I may change my picks right now. I'm sort of leaning McNeese and St. Mary's at the moment, but I'll tell you what, that could very well change tomorrow. They're going to be two. Those are my two games to watch in the first round. I can't wait.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks, Jack, for hopping on. Be sure to follow Jack on Twitter at JackBenjaminPXP. He does great work on CBS Sports Network, ESPN, and obviously for the Southland Conference. Jack, thanks for hopping on. It is tournament time. It is one of the more exciting times of the sports calendar. I know you're going to be locked in. Once again, thanks for hopping on, and we'll definitely catch up down the road.
Hey, I appreciate you having me. I'm hoping next time we do a March Madness related edition in the coming years, we're talking Santa Clara. that's my goal for sure. I got a lot of faith, you know, in where the pro. Hey, we three straight 20 win seasons for the first time since the 80s, so they're headed in the right direction. But you do a great job, Zach. Appreciate all you do for the WCC as a proud Santa Clara alum, and yeah, can't wait for the Madness. Hopefully, WCC fans are as excited as I am.